All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, week 14 edition of the show, off the bye week edition of the show, brought to you as always by our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. It was good to have the bye week. It was much needed, but I am ready, as I'm sure you are, for things to get back in the swing of things for four more weeks with an option for more and get those weekly rhythms of Buccaneer football on Sunday afternoons, which is what we have this weekend as the Vikings are in town. It'll be the Bucs' third straight home game, but third in 4 weeks because of the bye week, and the Bucs will take them on at 1 o'clock. It'll be on Fox. And so we're going to talk a lot today about that game, and we're going to talk about what we hope happened during the Bucs' preparation leading up to it, kind of build off what we talked about on last week's show as far as things we hope to see the Buccaneers do differently. It's a point in time right now that we're at, and I love this time of the season so much. We are exactly three-fourths of the way through the season in both total games played for the whole league and for the bye. Everybody's played 12 out of 16 now. There's no more bye weeks. There's 4 weeks left, all of which have a full slate of 16 games, assuming everything goes smoothly with COVID. And that's a big assumption, obviously. And so we got 64 games left in the regular season that will determine what the playoff teams are and what their seedings are. And it starts a stretch for the Bucs that actually lays out pretty good compared to most teams in the league. The Bucs so far this season have played their 12 games against the third toughest schedule in the NFL. Now that levels out a little bit here in the final four games in which they play, it's either the second or the third easiest stretch of four games of any of the teams remaining. And we said it last week, we'll keep saying it, for all the complaining we've done about mainly the past month and a half or so where the Bucs haven't played as well, and for all the complaining we've done about losing some of these bigger games and things like that, they have gone up against tough teams. I mean, the Rams are good. Obviously, we know who the Chiefs are. The Saints are good. I mean, these are the teams they've been playing lately. And so with the schedule evening out now, I expect, this doesn't mean it's going to happen, but this is what I expect. I expect the Buccaneers to play a lot better. Obviously, there's a direct result kind of comparison between how well you play and who you're playing against a lot of times. And this is a Vikings team who I think is gettable and who, if we're any, you know, all these shows we've done all year long talking about the Bucs going to the playoffs, if we weren't just wasting our time to begin with, then the Bucs go out and win a game like this. So we'll talk about it on the show today. The show, as always, brought to you by our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, home of the nationwide unlimited lifetime warranty, which means if you buy a car there and you own the car, as long as you're the owner that bought the car there, even if it's 3, 4, 5 years down the road, whatever it is, 6, 7 years down the road, you're covered. Like if you have engine trouble or something like that, you bring it back to the service center and you are covered under the nationwide unlimited lifetime warranty, which is an incredible deal that you don't get at most places. So there's that. There's the first year free service, oil changes, all that taken care of, again, at the service center. You get 10 years unlimited roadside assistance if you need that. And if you want to social distance, you don't want to go see them, go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. It's C-U-R-R-I-E. Check out all the inventory. They'll bring you a car to test drive to your place, home or office, whatever. They'll bring you the car you buy eventually if you do. And if you want to go see it in person, always open. Plenty of room over there in the big showroom in the big lot, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry. Bill Curry Ford. Check him out at BillCurryFord.com. So, we look at this game, and, you know, obviously with COVID it sucks because this is when the games get really fun. Like, it'd be so much fun to have a sellout Raymond James Stadium this weekend. Big December football game. The weather gets nicer. It's a little cool. I used to love these games back in the early 2000s, and I remember when I was a season ticket holder going to every single game every single week as a fan, not as a member of the media, and the tailgating we do, and this is the week where you start maybe getting that Bucks, that little jacket you have, maybe if a Bucks sweatshirt or something that you don't normally get to use, although it's supposed to be warmer this weekend. It's been chilly this week. The weather for Sunday should be just gorgeous, and it's just going to be a great day. Obviously, there is some capacity, but not full capacity, but hey, it's a big home game in December with big playoff implications. We love that, right? How often has that happened lately? I mean, I know they were 7-9 last year and technically not out of it at this point, but it wasn't the same. I think back over the years recently, I mean, a few years ago, this is the first time in a while I can remember a big, just huge dripping playoff implications just oozing out of this game's pores. Of the four games they have left, and they're all important, and the Bucks need to win at least three of them. Actually, they don't have to win at least three of them. With the way the playoff sets up, they could go 2-2 or even 1-3 and get in. But if you look at the remaining four games, this is, of those four, which are all important, probably the most important. It's the only one against a fellow playoff contender, and it's got the biggest swing in percentages as far as likelihood to make the playoffs. I think if the Bucks win this, and they're already at 80% right now, but if the Bucks win this, it goes up into the 90s, their chances of making the playoffs. If they lose this, it turns into a coin flip. And then you open the door for, well, first you'd be tied with Minnesota, which is bad. If you beat them, you'd be two games ahead of them with a tiebreaker head-to-head, so you'd have essentially clinched over Minnesota. You know, there's a lot on the table here. So you're coming off your bye week. You're coming up against the Minnesota team. Now, they've certainly straightened their act out, okay? They were 1-5. Only two other 1-5 teams have ever come back to make the playoffs, but they were 1-5. Now they're 6-6. But this is a team that lost to the 3-8 Cowboys. It's a team that even just last week, I think last week was the ideal scenario for the Bucks, because you don't want to play a team coming off of a loss. I'd rather them have won last week. Obviously, you don't want, for the playoff reasons, you don't want them to win, but I'd rather them have won last week than lost as far as how they come into this game. But they won looking very mediocre, and they barely eked out an overtime win against a 1-11 Jacksonville team. So this should be a game the Bucks go in. If we're anything, there's a song called, I can't remember the name of the song, but it's by a rapper named Lupe Fiasco, and one of the lyrics are, "If you are what you say you are." This is an "if you are what you say you are" game here for the Bucks. I mean, supposed to think, hey, this is a different team. All these improvements, went out and got Antonio Brown on top of all the things they did in the offseason. And now here it's all laid out in front of us. Maybe not the NFC South, that's out of reach. But everything else the Bucks are trying to do is right there in front of them. If you are what you say you are, you go out and take care of business on Sunday. And if you don't, what the hell were we wasting our breath about all this time anyway? It's a Minnesota team that, along with the three, or actually two other teams the Bucks play, because they play Atlanta twice, Minnesota, Atlanta, Detroit, the Bucks' three remaining opponents for four games, all are in the top five, or bottom five, depending on how you look at it, for the most pass plays of 20-plus yards allowed in the NFL this year. Minnesota allows the third most long pass plays of 20 yards or more. Atlanta, who the Bucks play two more times, is first in that category, and Detroit's fifth. It's a team that doesn't have much of a pass rush. It said, hey, the Bucks want to go deep. You know, we complained about how they do it too much, or they do it in the right situations. That you want to go deep this weekend, you ought to be able to do it, okay? Now, when they do go deep, and here's one of the things that I harped on last week, and the more I read about it this week, I'm even more upset about it now. You know, we said in the show last week, the bye week was big, even though it was a little late this year, and maybe the Bucks would have been better off if it had been earlier. It was big because the Bucks needed to work on themselves, not just for the time off. I mean, the time off physically, obviously, they needed, but they needed to work on themselves, not have a game plan that they're preparing for a certain opponent. They needed to self-scout, fix some things, and do some things. And one of the biggest things is the play action and the way they, I should say the way they use it, the way they don't use it. And I was looking at some numbers, and Thomas Bassinger tweeted this out earlier in the week to his credit. And it was basically three charts that kind of detail what the Bucks are doing on offense. So the Bucks right now, after 12 games, and everybody's even up now with 12 games, the Bucks are 19th in the NFL in yards per pass, which is not that good, obviously. So they're 19th. But if you only count play-action passes, the Bucks' yard per pass on play-action plays only, they are 4th in the NFL. So they do that really well, and we know this. We've been watching the games. They hit a lot of big plays, and they hit a lot of plays in general in the play action. So giving you those first two stats, again, 19th in yards per pass and 4th in yards per pass play action, where would you guess the Bucks rank in usage of the play action pass, play action rate? You'd probably guess they ranked in the top half, certainly, and you'd probably guess they'd rank maybe in the top 10 or even the top 7 or 8. it's a bread and butter thing for them. They do it well. Tom Brady likes to do it. It benefits him. And so, what if I were to tell you that despite ranking 19th in yards per pass, yet 4th in yards per pass in play action, that the Bucs rank 26th in play action pass usage? What if I were to tell you that? You'd probably think, oh my God, that's not just malpractice by Bruce Arians or Byron Leftwich. That's organizational malpractice. Like somebody else, like in the front office, should be telling, hey, like think about that. And this is where the Bucs organization makes me pull my hair out because, you know, we have three teams here in our area, three pro teams. We've got the Rays, the Lightning, and the Bucs. The Lightning are just coming off a Stanley Cup win, and hockey is getting more and more analytically driven. It's not where even football is, much less baseball. And then we've got the Rays. Now the Rays, say what you want about Stuart Sternberg. I know a lot of people don't like him. Say what you want about the attendance. Say what you want about a lot of different things. The Rays just won the American League pennant. They just played in the World Series. They have a payroll, regardless of what the reasons are for having that payroll or what you think their payroll should be. They have a payroll at the bottom of the league. And they consistently, not just this year where they just went to the World Series, but over a period of the past decade, really, almost 12 years now, have won more games than almost any other teams in the league besides the Yankees, the Dodgers. I mean, these are the teams they're up there with. If you look at the overall standings combined for the past, like, 12 years, going back to 2008, the Rays are in the top five in total wins. The Rays are amazing. I don't care what anybody says. That is amazing what they do. And they do it year in, year out, and they stay competitive when all these other teams who have bigger payrolls than them can't figure it out, and the Rays have. And that's why, okay? Why is that? The Rays do not miss, I mean, every single nook and cranny is covered, every single stone is turned over, every single possible little edge, like that extra 2%, like that book that was written. Whatever it is, the Rays are tapping it, they are exploiting it, and they are exploiting market inefficiencies. And when the market catches up, they find new market inefficiencies, and they are always, always, always squeezing every last drop out of the orange. For better or worse, if you think they ought to have more of an orange, fine. But the orange they do have, they get every last little bit, and they always do. And I love the Rays for that reason. I never feel with the Rays like I got cheated, like, oh man, they should have done this better or that better. I know a lot of people, they could have signed somebody else or whatever. That's different. But you never feel like they're leaving anything on the table. Like, the Rays don't do that, okay? So this isn't even hardcore analytics. This is a basic, hey, we're pretty average passing game, but we're really good at play action. So hey, let's run play action less than almost the entire league. I mean, that is insanity. Can you imagine if the Rays did something? You can't, because the Rays would never do that. And again, that's not even like some really specific, weird, like, you got to dig really deep into the hardcore spreadsheets to figure it out. Run more play action. For the love of God. I mean, it really is organizational malpractice. Like, it's not just Bruce Arians, although obviously it's Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich, which is their job to figure this stuff out more than anybody else. But it's Jason Light. It's whoever the hell else works over there. I mean, this is stuff you can see. Anybody can find these numbers on Pro Football Reference or whatever. You don't have to have access or some sort of password to get into like the special stats no one else has. Everybody can see that. Run it more! Play action, I'm talking about. And it's just stuff like that that, I mean, the Bucs have done a lot of great things in the past year, and the Bucs are night and day way ahead of where they were as an organization 1 year ago. I think we can all agree on that, and I would not dispute that. But they still make a lot of the basic mistakes that, I mean, they're just doing it to themselves, man. You know, guy drops a pass or something, he tried to catch it. You know, the other team played good defense. Stuff like that happens. You're always going to have that in any sport. But these are things that no one else is stopping you from doing. Like, when you're playing a sport, there's somebody across from you. You might make the play, you might not. That part is kind of random in a lot of ways, okay? Or it just comes down to who can execute. But things like this, nobody's even stopping you. This is low-hanging fruit. And the Bucs consistently don't do it. And so, you know, I know analytics isn't what it is in baseball and things like that, but it does exist in football. And some teams are more analytically advanced than others, and the Bucks are a little bit not, a lot not, and they need to catch up because they're wasting an opportunity because they have enough talent. If you look at their roster, and you know, we just went out and got Antonio Brown a few games ago. That was supposed to be part of their, hey, we're all in. Here's the Super Bowl push. We're not stopping at anything. We'll stop at nothing. You know, they go get him. And, you know, it hasn't made that much of a difference. They've used, and I'm not saying Antonio Brown's done anything wrong. He has not. I actually think he brings a lot to the offense. But usage, and play action is, again, something that doesn't have to be a very complicated thing. Let's hope the Bucks can figure out a way to do that better, because it doesn't have to be this way. You've got a chance this weekend to change the way you've been doing some things. And there was an article on Joe Bucks Fan, actually, I think it was today, about how Bruce Arians, and he was talking to Alex Marvez, I believe, with NFL Radio, and he opened up a little bit about how they do things, and he said, no, Tom Brady picks the plays, and he's got a big hand in all this, and you know, whether he does or doesn't, I don't want to argue about who's responsible for the offense anymore. Whoever it is, they need to do things differently. And it starts right here this weekend with a chance against a team with a propensity to give up big passing plays, a team that doesn't have much of a pass rush, a team that Tom Brady should be able to get in there and chow a little bit on. And I expect that. That is 100% what I expect to see when the Vikings take on the Bucks this Sunday. If you want to email me, I love getting your emails. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. It's BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. Same thing on Twitter. Always love hearing from you guys. If you want to follow or just tweet at me, it's @BobbyGameDay. And so a few more numbers here looking at this. The Bucks, and particularly Bruce Arians coach teams coming off the bye week. First of all, the bye week as a whole this year and in the past decade in the NFL, teams off the bye since 2010 are 181, 167, and 2. So that's a 520 winning percentage. So it's a little bit better, obviously, than randomness, but it's not that much different than randomness. In fact, it comes out to one extra win over every 64 games in that time, compared to just league average. So having the bye week helps a little bit, but I thought it would show up more in the numbers, and it really hasn't, at least in the past 10 years. Just this year alone, 32 teams, 30 of them had their byes already before the Bucks and Panthers, and then played a game after that. Teams off the bye are 17 and 13 so far this year, which is a 516 win percentage, which is in line with what it's been over the past decade. The Bucks and Panthers will get their cracks at it this weekend. Looking at DVOA, the Bucks, despite not having played well over the past few weeks, are still number 3 overall in the league in DVOA. Offensively, they're 6th. Defensively, they're 3rd. That compares with Minnesota at number 15, who offensively is number 13 and defensively is number 9. And of course, we know all about Kirk Cousins, who the Bucks have not played against since, does anybody remember the last time? I think it was the only other time they played against Kirk Cousins. That Redskins game, that you like that game. You guys remember that when the Bucks took a 24-0 lead? What was that? I should have looked it up. 2015, 2016? It was a few years ago. And the Bucks were up 24-0, blew the lead. The Redskins came back and won. And Kirk Cousins was captured coming into the tunnel, off the field, into the locker room, yelling, "You like that? You like that?" And it was just another of a string of Bucks losses that blended together over the past 10 years. But I remember that one. That was the last time they faced Kirk Cousins. So I don't expect that to happen again this weekend. Obviously, Dalvin Cook is a big part of what they do, and as well he should be. But when the Bucks are on defense, to me it still comes down to the passing game. It always does. And if you look at Kirk Cousins, he does have the second most passing yards in the league over the last 4 weeks. Only Aaron Rodgers has thrown more TDs in that time as well. Adam Thielen, he had been out with COVID, came back last week, had 8 catches. So it's on the Bucks secondary. Bucks still rank 8th in passing DVOA, pass defense DVOA. But as we've seen the past few weeks, they got lit up a little bit when they were out there against the Chiefs. Although I still say the defense has done almost as much as you could have asked. In both the Chiefs game and the Rams game, they've done as much as you could have asked. And to me, I it still comes down to when the Bucks are on offense, not when they're on defense. And if you look at the Vikings secondary, I mean, they've had injuries all year, but they currently have a couple guys out, a couple more guys questionable. We talked about how prone they are to giving up the big play over the whole season, And so, you know, the Buccaneers really need to be able to throw the ball this weekend, and they need to throw the ball aggressively on early downs too, because, and Bruce Arians said it in his media gaggle earlier today, I think it was today, that he said, you know, they were talking to him about third downs, and he said, you know, one good way to be better on third down is to not even have so many third downs. Something we've said over and over on this show, the best offenses don't convert on third down as much as they just stay out of third downs, and they're just moving the ball on first and second down. They're explosive enough where they don't face a lot. You know, you can have third and six, third and seven, third and eight, and yeah, you might get some of those, but you're going to punt some of those times too. Stay out of those altogether. I'm not concerned about your hit rate on third down. I'm concerned with not facing that as much. And so it sounds like Bruce Arians realizes that. So let's see if he then follows his own advice and we don't get married to handing the ball off over half the time on first down and getting in second and eight, second and seven, second and nine. Because it's hard when you do that. It's hard to stay out of. You're going to look at some sort of a third down in a lot of cases. And you want to stay out of third downs. You want to move in chunks. And so, you know, I know the popular, like, dogma when you have an offense that's struggling is a little bit, oh, they need to get back to running the ball better. We're going to run the ball. No, they need to run the ball less, not more. You know, come out throwing and throw on these guys. And I'm calling to see a little bit more Scotty Miller and types like that. You know, Scotty Miller was the guy of all the receivers whose role got diminished the most when they signed Antonio Brown. And yet, if you look at the Bucs' numbers for receivers, yards per catch, average distance, you know, yards per catch, Scotty Miller is number one on the team. He's averaging 15.3 yards per catch. He was one of their best downfield threats. So we hear all this about the Bucs struggling downfield. Well, you know, if you want to get better at that, and if you're hell-bent on doing it the way Bruce Arians is and Byron Leftwich is, okay, well, use him more. Antonio Brown, who's the guy that's been, I'm not ripping Antonio Brown at all, but Antonio Brown's the guy that has been taking the snaps from Scotty Miller. Antonio Brown, of all the Bucs receivers, is last in yards per catch with 8.4. Here's the full list. Scotty Miller is one. I'm only going to use guys who, like O.J. Howard is third, but he's not part of it anymore. He's out for the season. Justin Watson is also up there, but he doesn't qualify with enough catches. So of the regulars, or guys who have caught at least a certain amount of passes, Scotty Miller, 15.3 yards per catch. That's number one on the team. Gronkowski is number two. Then Mike Evans is third. Tyler Johnson is fourth. Chris Godwin is fifth. Cameron Brate is sixth. Tanner Hudson's in there too, but he doesn't play enough. And then number seven is AB, Antonio Brown. So, okay, well, and I'm not saying Antonio Brown doesn't need to be in the game, but you got all these weapons, and yet here's the one that's helping you downfield the most, and you're not using him while complaining that we can't throw it downfield well enough. So again, these are things like, this isn't analytics, this isn't things, you know, we got to really dig deep here. These seemingly obvious things are little things you can change up, and maybe they've done that during the bye week. I hope that they have, where we can expect the Buccaneers to be better. I wanted to mention on the show today as well, a couple off-the-field things, actually. First of all, the Bucs have nominated their Man of the Year for the Walter Payton Award. Every team nominates one person, and that person is that team's Man of the Year, but then they go on for like the NFL Man of the Year. And the Bucs nominated Mike Evans, so congrats to him. And Mike Evans does a ton of things with his foundation. You know, Christmas gifts for kids, visiting people and befriending kids in hospitals, paying for things, you know, unexpected losses or things that happen to fam, stuff that you don't even hear about. He does a ton of that stuff. He's one of the most prominent guys in the community, but he also does even more than that that you don't hear about. So I wanted to take a second to congratulate Mike Evans, completely non-football related, on getting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Man of the Year Award and going on to be up for the NFL Man of the Year Award. And I also wanted to say something real quick about Ray Perkins. Ray Perkins, if for those of you that have been Bucs fans going back to the really old days, was the third head coach in Buccaneer history. They had John McKay from their inception all the way through 1984, Lehman Bennett for a couple of years where they went 2-14 both years. And then Ray Perkins was hired in 1987. He had been the head coach of the New York Giants, actually was the coach of the Giants before Bill Parcells. Then he went and coached Alabama for a few years and then took the Bucs job. And he was signed at the time for like a big money that was like a big deal. Like, we were getting Ray Perkins in 1987. Was the coach in 87, 88, 89, and 90. Got fired toward the end of the 1990 season. So he passed away at the age of 79 this week. And Rick Stroud, the Bucs beat writer for the Tampa Bay Times, actually wrote a really cool, like really good piece that filled in a lot of things for me. Because, you know, when Ray Perkins was the head coach, that was from my age 7 year through age 10. And Ray Perkins is actually the first Buccaneer head coach that I have clear memories of. I remember watching Bucs games under John McKay and Lehman Bennett. Like, I remember that. But Ray Perkins is the first one I remember, like, hearing in interviews. And, like, I was old enough to pay attention and follow the team, not just watch the games. And so I remembered a lot of stuff about that. And, you know, he was a whole old-school, hardcore type guy. This is back when the Bucs had training camp at UT at Pepinrud Stadium on North Boulevard there, which is still a beautiful facility. I kind of miss when they had training camp there. But he would do three-a-days back then, and they would hit, like, you know, this is late 80s, 1990. I mean, that's the way it was back then. And so he was kind of a hard ass. And Stroud, in his story, told one part about a guy who was kind of overweight, didn't make weight coming into camp. So instead of practicing with the team, Perkins had him in a sweatsuit riding a stationary bike on the track at Pepinrud every single practice until he made weight. And like every day for like 2 weeks, the media would ask, hey, did so-and-so make weight? Is he bet? No, he's still riding the treadmill or the stationary bike, whatever it was. And then one day, finally, the media asked the same question they were always asking him. And Perkins finally said, yeah, actually he made weight. So he's done with the stationary bike. Actually, I cut him earlier today. So once the guy made weight, he immediately cut him. And he was trying to change what was then a losing culture. It didn't work out, and it wouldn't work out for some years as the Bucs continued to kind of mire in mediocrity with double-digit losing seasons. But thoughts go out to his family. Again, I look back at those times, and they're not great times in Buccaneer history overall, but for my age, those are the formative years of my Bucs, you know, fanship, if you will. And the records didn't matter as much to me at that age. And I look back at those years very, very fondly. And so it was kind of a trip down memory lane when I saw that he had passed away. And I recommend reading the piece by Rick Stroud. I tweeted it out on my Twitter account, at Bobby Game Day, if you want to go check on the link. Especially if you're a Bucs fan who goes back that far and kind of remembers a lot of that. It's really neat to read it. But even if you're not, and you want to fill in kind of some of the holes over the franchise's existence before you became a fan, whenever that was, it was really cool. I love reading about Bucs history. I could read about that stuff all day. I remember another game. This is when I was really young, but I remember this. The Bucs were playing the Patriots in Foxborough, and it was just freezing ass cold. It was one of those in that long streak of losses under 40 degrees. And it was 7-7. The game went to overtime. The Bucs won the toss. There were 30-mile-an-hour winds that day, like straight in one direction of the field. And when the Bucs won the toss, Perkins deferred. He's like, no, we'd rather take the wind. Which, you know what? Probably wasn't a bad decision. But in just like everything else with the Bucs during that time frame, it blew up in their face. And the Patriots took the ball into the 30-mile-an-hour wind, drove all the way down to like the 5-yard line and kicked like a 20-yard field goal, won the game 10-7 without the Bucs having the ball. This is in the regular old sudden death rules of overtime. Stuff like that used to happen to the Bucs all the time. And yet, even though that wasn't a great time in Buccaneer history, and there weren't a lot in those years, those memories, you know, that was the formative time for me. I mean, that, you can't replace those memories. No matter what you end up being as an adult or what you do as an adult, the stuff from like age 7 or 8 through like age, you know, 17 or 18, like before you go to college, that's the really, really hardcore like greaseball stuff that goes back to the old country for me. But you know what feels almost as long ago is the Bucs playing in the playoffs. And what happens on Sunday at 1 o'clock between 1 and about 4:15 p.m. is going to go a long way in erasing that 13 years long streak now we have of the Bucs not playing in the playoffs. So for anybody out there, I'm trying to go to the game, by the way. I have not, let me tell you, I have not been to a Bucs game in person this year with COVID. The media stuff is real bare bones skeleton crew. I was going to buy my season tickets back this year that I used to have, which I had told you on the show before. I said, I will buy my season tickets when they fix the uniforms. So they fixed them. So I was going to buy them. And then, of course, COVID happened during the off season, and they never put any season tickets on sale. So I haven't been to a game yet. Now, I have been to a game, and I used to go to literally every single one, but I've been to at least one home game every single year I've been alive. That is a true thing. That's not, or since I was like two or whatever, or three, when I was old enough to go to a game, my parents took me. I've been to at least one home game every single season. As it's shaping up, I may not be in town for the Falcons game at the end of the year, which means Sunday is my last chance. So I'm going to go to this game. And I'm going to either buy tickets. I mean, you can buy tickets online, and I'll do that. But hey, if anybody out there has tickets and they're looking to unload, or you can't go, or you know somebody, hit me up, email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. I will buy them from you. But one way or the other, I'm going to go to this game and take my son. I know it's not the same as a full house, but it's important to me to be there. And so I'm looking forward to it. And as I told you earlier in the show, it's going to be an absolutely gorgeous day. I mean, temperature should be in the 70s, sunny and clear. It's not going to be as cold as it's been earlier this week and things like that. As far as the injury situation, I never got to that. In practice today, Jamel Dean is the only one of note who did not practice. He's got a little groin thing. It's not clear if he's going to play on Sunday. Chris Godwin didn't do anything today, but he will. He's going to start catching passes on Friday. I'm recording this on Thursday. Of course, he had the pins removed from his fingers. He's been playing with that. Got them removed this week, and he should be good to go. And coming off the bye week, the Bucs are relatively healthy. Other than that, Mike Evans, they said, had a little hamstring thing. Even coming off the bye, they're still kind of keeping that an eye on it, but I think he'll be fine too. So that's the injury situation. Weather should be great. It's a big game in December, like I said. It's got all the ingredients except the sellout crowd, but it's going to be fun either way. So thanks again to all of you for listening. I always love talking to you guys. You can email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, or find me on Twitter at bobbygameday. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, our sponsors of the show. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform and putting me in front of all of you. It's the single best place anywhere for Bucks coverage, and it's a great privilege to be part of the operation at Joe Bucks Fan. Y'all have fun. Take care of yourselves. Let's enjoy the beautiful weather weekend and enjoy some Buccaneer football. And no matter what, I'll be back next week for the show. Hopefully we're talking about an 8-5 football team. Until then, wherever you are, be safe. Have fun this weekend. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.